from the top of a kitchen table to the Inc. 500 list. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Jeff Grayson, who is the president of X-Core Aerospace. And Jeff, first of all, we really appreciate you taking some time out on a hot afternoon to talk to us and our listeners today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, I should say so. You guys have had quite a year, but before we get into that, tell us a little bit about how X-Core started, because it's been a while, I think, since we had a lot of stories coming out of X-Core. And just to bring our casual followers of the aerospace industry up to date, tell us about your progress starting in 1999 to where you are now.
Well, when we started, it was four people who'd all been laid off together from another space venture, and we still believed in the potential of the industry and weren't ready to give up. So we sat down. I rented an office, so I had a place to put my computer, and we worked in Dan DeLong's hangar and met around his dining room table, and it was just the four of us.
Did it seem at the time like it even made sense to put aerospace in the name of the company?
Well, it was what we were about. We didn't expect to put aerospace in the start of the company, but the California Patent and Trademark Office wanted to make sure we did that, so we distinguished our name properly from one of the chip companies.
Ah, okay. All right. So what did you guys envision doing when you first got together, other than dodging unemployment checks?
Well, that would imply that we were getting paid.
Oh, yeah. Well,
the business plan overall for the company was the same then as it is now. We envisioned that there were significant markets for reusable space vehicles. We envisioned that that would have to start with suborbital vehicles because that would be much more technically feasible and a much more appropriate step for a new start company to go after. And we saw that there were certain technology pieces, engines and tanks and pumps, that nobody was selling on the market the kinds of capabilities we would need to make that vehicle successful. So we were going to have to go out and start by developing those pieces. We started with rocket engines. That's been where a lot of the work that's been public over the years went in for the first three quarters or so of the company's existence. And now we're spending more of our emphasis on vehicle systems.
Was there a feeling at the time, or at least to the extent that it's turned out, that private enterprise would be as involved in advancing space exploration as has happened fairly quickly?
Actually, I thought it would happen a little faster than it has. It was clear that space was a fallow field for real commercial for-profit work. It was clear to me at the time that private enterprise could do a lot more than people traditionally associated with it in the space arena. And it's taken longer than I expected for those trends to become apparent. But now that it's happening, it does seem to be happening fairly quickly.
I was going to say, back in 1999, did you envision that New Mexico would be announcing a spaceport, or that Richard Branson would be announcing a suborbital airline?
No and yes, respectively.
Oh, okay. All right, that's interesting. Well, okay, so 1999, you got started. I think your big breakthrough as a company in terms of public awareness came with the Easy Rocket. How did that develop? I mean, that plane has been a platform for a lot of different kinds of experimentation, but did it just seem kind of over the top to consider putting a rocket in it to a lot of people?
Well, not a lot of people knew about it until it was done.
Yeah, that's true.
That was by design. I took of the founders probably the most convincing that was a step that was going to make sense for us to do. It was clear from the beginning that it would be a good technical step for us to do, that it would teach us a lot of things that we needed to know. It was clear from the beginning that it would help to put the company on the map, but it wasn't until the advantages of doing that in helping to start important regulatory discussions with the federal government became clear that it was obvious that there were enough reasons to do it, that we should commit, you know, all that we had to trying to pull it off, because that was a make-or-break decision for the company.
What's the most important thing that was proved by the Easy Rocket? Was it the throttleability and stoppability and startability of that engine?
No, that was a useful and important thing, but the most important reason for doing it technically was to put some reality on the cost models that we had been doing that led us to believe that suborbital spaceflight could be done at a cost low enough that it would be significantly profitable. You know, at that time, the notion of making money with a manned rocket flight where the price that you're going to charge people is, you know, $100,000 or less, at a time when everybody thought that manned rocket flight was a, you know, $100 million kind of activity. You know, and you could talk and talk and talk about the reasons why this was different from that, but the fact remained nobody had ever demonstrated costs down in the range where this was necessary to be for it to be a profitable enterprise. And so the most important thing we got out of the Easy Rocket was measuring the operations cost and the maintenance man hours and, you know, what the consumables really are and how often we have to replace things so that we have a solid basis for going forward.
But it did turn out...
And as it turned out, it significantly... our cost models were way off. We estimated we could get it down to $5,000 per flight, and by the end of its life, we had it down to $900 per flight.
Well, it turned out to be a great mascot for you. It ended up attracting some investment to the company, although you're still privately held, or are you?
We are still privately held and expect to be so for some time.
Okay. Tell us, before we take our break here, about the investment that came in June.
That was by the Boston Harbor Angels. That was significant, probably not so much because of the amount, although it was, of course, a very welcome investment, but because it's a sign of the maturing of the company and the maturing of the industry that, you know, angel groups sort of bridge the gap between pure individuals and more traditional venture capital institutions. And that's a sign of the changing times that someone at that kind of next level of investment capital would consider this to be an investment worthy of their time and attention.
What will that investment let you guys do that you previously would have been unable to do?
Well, that, together with some additional individual investments we've gathered, have really given us the money we need to carry the suborbital vehicle effort forward to its next phase.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and talk about the year you've had, because it's been pretty incredible. We're talking today with Jeff Grayson, who's the president of X-Core Aerospace. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, and my guest today is Jeff Grayson, who's the president of X-Core Aerospace. Jeff, you guys have had an amazing year. Let's start off talking about January and the testing of the methane rocket idea. Where does this fit into the spectrum of products that we'll need for the space age to come?
Well, methane is interesting to X-Core, primarily because it's about the highest performing non-toxic propellant combination that there is. And you know, we only deal with non-toxic propellants here. We only deal with things that are, you know, safe to have in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And for later vehicles, as we move past suborbit and go on to orbital systems, performance becomes a more and more important parameter. So we had some privately funded work going to try out LOX methane, because although it had looked good in theory, very little work had actually gone on with it in practice. And we just happened to be in the right time at the right place. We were just getting some really good results with LOX methane when NASA, for its own reasons, decided that it wanted to seriously investigate LOX methane for use in its Return to the Moon program. And so we realized NASA wanted to look at a lot of different areas, and not all of them were appropriate for us. So we teamed up with a larger company, ATK, and together we proposed doing a lot of hardware experimentation and proof of concept firings for NASA to really buy down the technical risk for including these engines in their future roadmap. And the program just recently wrapped up its first phase a few weeks or a month ago. But I can't talk too much about the additional results that we got until I've had a chance to have a release that all of the parties have blessed. But okay. There's additional work and additional results. But in January, we were able to release sort of the first phase of that program. And it was, I think everybody was very pleased that we got as far as we did in such a short time. It's not very traditional for, you know, a series of first firings on a brand new propellant, on a brand new engine, on a brand new stand to be taking place, you know, a few months after the program starts.
Oh, sure. Well, and NASA is coming under a lot of scrutiny, even though the number of space flights compared to the number of trips driven in motor vehicles on the surface of the Earth is always going to remain infinitesimal. NASA is coming under a lot of scrutiny by the environmental community for the environmental impact of a space flight. What are the byproducts of combustion of liquid oxygen and methane?
Water and carbon dioxide, and you get about half the carbon dioxide that you would with a more traditional hydrocarbon for the same amount of thrust.
Okay. All right. Let's move on through the year a little bit to the Air Force contract in April. What exactly did they have you undertake for them?
We have a suborbital vehicle program of our own going on, and the Air Force is funding some work to see how we can more effectively use that kind of vehicle as a testbed to try out technologies of interest to them.
Okay, so it's still kind of in the theoretical realm or working on a development platform for things they might dream up later.
Yeah, well, it's not so much that they might dream up later. They have a candidate list of technologies that they want to mature for some applications of their own interest. And they put out a solicitation for people to propose ways that they could find out how effective those technologies were. And our proposal was, well, rather than theoretically modeling them, the best way to find out if they're effective is to fly them.
Mm-hmm.
So the contract is essentially to find out that's a good idea. How do we do that? You know, how would we use this kind of vehicle as a testbed for those technologies?
All right, let's move on to the latest press release you had, and that was that your company has been named to the Inc. 500 Fastest Growing Companies list. And to qualify, you guys had posted a 646% growth over a 3-year period from 2003 through 2006. First of all, congratulations. Second of all, can this kind of pace be kept up?
Probably not. if you were looking for a high percentage growth, it certainly helps to start from a small number.
That's true. That's just uncharacteristically candid, Jeff.
we've certainly been very frank about the fact that a lot of the revenue growth has come because we are taking and competing and successfully for larger R&D contracts, and because of the work that we're doing with the Rocket Racing League. And the next few years, more of our focus is going to be going into the suborbital vehicle effort, and that won't start to generate revenue until it's out there flying.
So tell us, you mentioned the rocket.
My guess would be that the next few years, the revenue is going to grow more slowly, and then we'll be back up on a significant positive ramp when that next phase comes.
All right, let me stop you right here and ask you about the Rocket Racing League, because I have two questions. First of all, when? Second of all, how big a deal is this in giving your company a profile? It seems like it would kind of be an extension of what the Easy Rocket did for you.
Well, as to when, you'll have to ask the Rocket Racing League.
Okay.
I can't comment on that at all. As to the exposure, yeah, certainly it's going to let a lot more people see the kinds of capabilities these things can do. It's going to hopefully raise the public profile not just of X-Corp but of the continuing to grow private space and rocket industry. And I think that there are potential clients for highly reusable rocket technology that, as we demonstrate more and more operations per day and shorter turnaround time, it's going to open a lot of eyes for what can really be done, and that may lead to some interesting phone calls.
Well, I'm sure that they are, and I'm sure they come as a surprise when they come to you. Is there still the fire that there was when you guys were gathered around the kitchen table? Has it worked out the way you thought it was, and are there challenges that you can identify ahead that still excite you?
Oh yeah, I'm older now, and you know, but I've always been an even keel person. You know, I don't jump up and down very often, and when things look great, and I don't get depressed when things are down. Mm-hmm. But the challenges ahead are still incredibly exciting. I think we're at just the beginnings of what this industry can do. People who follow space technology don't really appreciate just how different from the way that normal profit-making industries work space has been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came out of a different industry, semiconductors, and the worldwide R&D budget at that time, 10 years ago, for semiconductors was $100 billion.
Right.
And, you know, I think that money, for various reasons, buys you more bang for each dollar spent than you traditionally get out of a traditional civil aerospace program.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, not only is it more money, but it's being spent more effectively. And what space can do, if people can figure out how to make a buck doing it, a lot can be done.
Yes. Well, and that's kind of the whole American story, if you look back over a couple centuries, is finding a way to get somebody excited about making money at it. And it sounds like a very crass thing to say, but that's when everything opens up.
Yeah, and there's nothing, you know, that it's not that doing things privately is in some sense in conflict with all of the higher purposes that we want to see accomplished in space. It is more that, you know, when there is an industrial base of commercial space transportation in various arenas that is available cost-effectively and doesn't have to come out of taxpayer dollars, then taxpayer dollars spent in space can buy so much more.
Oh, sure. Well, Jeff, it's been great to talk to you. You're having a great year. I can only imagine that great things are yet to come. If our listeners want to find out more, the website is www.xcor.com, and we will hope to stay in touch with you.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Jeff Grayson is the president of XCOR Aerospace, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.